Live from the WGY studios every Sunday, this is the Paul Potrat Show.
Stop spraying and praying. You're wasting money.
Millennials aren't lazy. It's how you lead them.
When you sell by price, you die by price.
The Paul Potrat Show, helping your business grow and stay relevant.
Covering the latest technology for business, leadership trends, and changing your mindset on marketing.
Now, your hosts, Paul Potratz, the business architect, and Samantha Zewalinski, the millennial entrepreneur.
Good morning, Paul. Happy Sunday.
Good morning.
So I want to start, before we get into anything, with a quote I read this morning, and it just really resonated with me. So let me hear what your thoughts are on it. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so make goals that scare you a little and excite you a lot. I read it and I was like, I love that.
So did you start making some goals that are scaring you?
You know, I think we should always have things that challenge us. Like, for example, one of the things, you know, I do is go out and speak. It scares me a little bit. But it definitely excites me a lot more than it scares me.
Boy, I know that feeling. The question is, have you ever started to like gag before you have to speak?
No. Maybe like a little like pitter-patter more faster than normal, but
there's
no.
So many times I will just start, and I don't mean like bad gag, but just like choke a little bit.
I'm trying
like
not choking. To picture that.
Yeah, just kind of choke, and then I've got to, you know, like eat an Altoid or chew on an Altoid, drink water or something like that. So, yeah.
Definitely water.
Yeah, but it's, you kind of think about the things that scare us. I mean, where you get scared about going and speaking a little bit, but the excitement is there, the adrenaline's pumping. What's there to be scared about?
Well, I think part of it is you always want to put your best foot forward. You don't want to fail or fall on your face. Both are possible.
Right, true. I've almost done that, both going up on the riser and coming down.
But I think really it's that it's something different. You know, it's a little bit outside of your comfort zone because you're not as consistently doing it at first, for sure. But it's, you don't want to fail with it.
Right. Well, I mean, you think about that, though, just public speaking. That's supposed to be, you know, well, not supposed to be. I know it is. It's one of the biggest fears that the vast majority of people have.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I know it scared me to death for years. Oh, bad. But... so what do you got to do to get over that?
Do it.
Yeah. It's as simple as that.
Just, you know, grab the bull by the horns and go for it.
Well, I think that one of the things that would really help someone if they want to, and of course, we're not talking about public speaking today, but, you know, we're just talking
about. Just kind of going there.
Yeah, for real. Just scary things is preparation.
Yes.
That you've got, you really have to prepare. And I mean, prepare even if you're preparing, you know, in the shower. In the morning and practicing your speech in front of the mirror in the morning, in the car, driving down the road, and you look over at the person driving beside you and they look at you like, "What? Who, are they on their phone or what? Mm-hmm. What are they going on?" But you got to use all the hand motions and everything too, of course. And then get a small group of friends and practice in front of them. And that's what I did. And I was more self-conscious about doing it in front of my friends because I you know, kind of played and joked and everything else. And then finally one of my friends said, "Paul, get serious now."
Yeah.
I was like, ooh.
Well, that's definitely a more intimidating audience, I would think, because you have such an interpersonal relationship with them and you feel like you're really being judged first, you know, maybe a room full of or majority full of strangers.
Right. So talking about that, fear comes failure.
Correct.
So what's something that you've failed at this week?
Ooh, I have to pick just one?
No, you can pick more than one.
So I actually think that there's a few different types of failure that are both positive and negative. So I think I fail maybe once a day or every couple of days within a week, but it's different things. It's not going to like put us out of business failure. So, for example, I had a call with a client earlier this week, and hindsight's 20/20. Got off the call and thought, could have done that a little differently. So in my mind, I may have failed in my delivery of the call. It didn't make or break that account, but I could have done something a lot better, a lot stronger, a lot more persuasive in that specific instance. So in my mind, I failed on that call.
So were there other people on the call?
Yes.
Did you ask them how they thought the call went?
Yes, because I think one thing is we always evaluate how a group call goes. Because you ever see those YouTube videos about like how a conference call goes? Everybody's like beeping in and out, waiting for each other to talk.
Right.
And so I think especially in a group call, you have to kind of sense each other and build off of each other, support each other, especially when you have multiple people from your same team. So, yeah, I think that, you know, we're our hardest critics a lot of the times. But if we don't critique ourselves, we can't figure out where we have to grow, because no matter how good you are at what you do, you're never the best.
So here's a question. What are we talking about today? We're all over the board here. Well, we're really not, but what do we, I think
my quote ran into one of the topics we were going to talk about in more of our leadership business segment, which is failure.
Say the quote again though.
So the quote is, make goals that scare you a little and excite you a lot.
Okay. So what are we talking about then?
So we're going to talk about scent marketing to get the ball rolling.
Wait, scent marketing?
Scent marketing.
That excites me.
It does.
Yeah, it really does. Scent marketing. And it's so much more than marketing. Don't think it's marketing. It's so much different. And I'll talk about something that's kind of gross.
Okay. And then we're going to go into what a lead-in. Then we're going to go into failure and talking about large and small failures and how they impact you personally and the business that you work in or run, and then go into the business breakdown. We've got three great questions for today's conversation.
Ooh, excited about that. So, boy, failure though, that's going to be a big one. That's going to be fun to talk about that. So you gave me one thing that you failed on. Give me one more, and then let's get into scent marketing, because I'm excited about that, and I want to talk about something gross.
One other thing that I think I failed on would be, I think I'm very critical of how I handle inner office issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I mean by that is how people deal with problems. So in our office, and this is fully transparent, we have some emotional team members.
And you want to be like Mother Hen.
And I am Mother Hen.
Yeah, I know.
I think.
You are.
And so I've actually been really thinking about this. I haven't even told you about it. So hearing your opinion and anybody in our audience that can relate, I definitely love to hear your advice on this, is how much is too much letting a team member have emotion about an issue? So I've said on the show before, come in my office if you need to scream, punch a hole in the wall, you know, or cry. That's fine. Get it out. Let's move on. Let's like address the issue that's giving you this reaction and solve the problem. But I think a pattern of that may also be a pattern that we need to break a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's not consistently having this emotion about whatever's happening.
And you know how I feel about that.
Cannot deal with it.
No. Well, it's not that I can't deal with it. I choose not to deal with
it. And that sounds bad. But I mean,
it depends on what the issue is.
Yes.
If it's something serious, that someone has been diagnosed with a disease or a family member is sick or something like that, that's out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be there for that person. But if it's just...
Well, and that's true emotion.
Yeah.
You know, that's truly a thing to have emotion about. And I think we can have emotion about the things that are happening in our business lives as well, but it kind of goes back to that small and large failure, but like small and large issues.
Right.
Is it really a problem, or is it just something that you're letting get to you?
Yeah.
Like in the grand scheme of things, when we look back at tomorrow, or we look back at yesterday,
we look to tomorrow
and then look back at yesterday, is it going to even be a blimp on the radar? Like if it isn't, then we cannot be getting emotional about it. We just need to like pick up our bootstraps and like move forward.
Right.
So I think one thing I've been thinking about in failure is, am I failing my team by letting them be too emotional about it and not being a little bit more stern in some instances and being like, okay, let's take a breather, cut it out, you know, and then move on.
Just real simple.
And like helping them break the habit. I think I do a good job at letting them get it out, finding the issue, correcting the issue, but maybe being more stern on removing the emotion from the conversation we have.
But how much time does that take of your day and their day just because they're like basically knowing that they can go through that? And I mean, think about it. It's like you think about raising a kid, and if you let your kid throw a tantrum, you know, and if you feed into that, the tantrum starts
to increase.
Well,
and if you sit there during the tantrum, that's what it is, right? So, yeah, I mean, it can take anywhere from... It's honestly not very quick because you're processing through the emotion to what the true issues are. and then having to coach through it multiple times. It's not just addressing an issue, finding a solution, and then moving, boom, next thing.
It's at least an hour.
So it's usually an hour conversation.
Yes.
You know, so I think that's where I'm kind of saying, you know, maybe that is a failure on my part and also serving my team. So it's something I've been kind of thinking about, and that's an instance that's happened this week in my business life.
Yeah. Well, and I think you should always be thinking about failures, though, in the way that you're failing and then how you can improve off things. And we're going to get into this more, definitely. So we got
You're too excited about SEM marketing to, like, stay on failure right now.
No, I'm not.
So I think maybe if you want to go head over to the Paul Potratz Facebook page, so go ahead and look for the professional page, the page itself, not Paul Potratz the person. Comment, let us know maybe a failure you've experienced this week. Let us know something that you've could provide feedback to me, maybe you've experienced this in your business, and we can talk about it, continue this conversation, and we'll also maybe feature your comment as we progress through the conversation. But first, I guess we're gonna smell some stuff.
Well, I don't know, you didn't ask me about my failures. I'm just sitting here waiting for you to ask me about my failures.
Well, you want to, if we're going to go to scent marketing, we'll go to scent marketing and circle back.
No. However you want to move on this. So what do you think?
Well, what are your failures then?
I feel like my failures that I have short failures, in other words, you know, failures like through the week, and then I have life failures that I'm always trying to improve on. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like something so kind dealt of the small me. And the big failures that we're talking about.
Yeah. And I feel like my big failure is not getting up early enough.
Yeah. It's so funny you say that because I just said that to Corey yesterday. I wish I was a morning person.
You know, and it's funny because, there is people that are morning people. There's no doubt. But like my dad, he was a morning person and he would get up every morning, generally around 5:15. Mm-hmm. And you would know he was up because he's whistling and he's singing. And it was just like, and I'm like, stop. But yeah. So
why do you think that's a failure, or how are you working on that? Are you just taking it with you and carrying it with you?
Yeah, I think I just kind of, you know, I go through spells where I will get up early in the morning, and then there's other times that I'm just like, there's no reason to get up early. I've got to wait for Christy. She has to feed the horses. You know, maybe I should get up and feed the dogs, though. But, you know.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah, divide and conquer. So I think that's one that always bothers me, because it's like, hey, but, you know, hey, winter's coming now. So the sun's not up. So there's my excuse. There's my justification.
It's going to be even harder to get up.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, I'm not going to get up while it's dark.
So that's a failure you carry with you.
Yes.
But you kind of cope with.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes I overcome it and do the right thing and get up early. And other times I'm just lazy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it just depends. So.
And then you said you carry some small failures.
Yeah, I think we all have small failures, of course, like you said. And I think small failures is not for me. Not always, but sometimes not making decisions fast enough, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes I procrastinate on a decision. And I mean, but that could come back to bite you, because if you make a snap judgment, so it's kind of a happy medium. But I think sometimes I just don't make decisions fast enough.
Okay.
Depending on, you know, what it is. Just kind of move, deal with it, go fast, be quicker than other people. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of instances, a delay of a decision can affect you greatly, or, you know, like you said, you can be too fast and it could be the wrong decision as well because you didn't think about the situation.
Yeah, I just got to get in sync. Sometimes I make a really fast decision, and then other times I don't make it fast enough. Here's something weird that just popped in my head. Okay, this is kind of weird. Have you ever been like in the motion of doing something and you kept on saying, for example, this morning I'm ironing my pants.
Okay.
And I'm thinking I should really move that iron before I burn my hand. And then I'm like, no, I never burn my hand. I never get burned on an iron. And I got burnt on the iron.
It's almost like you thought about it. So it happened.
Yeah. It's like I made the decision I should move the iron and I didn't do it. And it's like, ow, man, why didn't I do that? So.
Life's teaching you a lesson.
Yeah, like going to drop a glass. If I keep on doing that, I'm going to knock the glass off the table. Nah, it'll be fine. I won't do it. Boom. Knock the glass off the table. I don't know. That just popped in my head. That's kind of weird.
So maybe a little failure for not moving fast enough.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what it is. Oh, there you go. Cool.
Are there failures you think that are failures every business should experience?
Yeah, I think if you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough. I mean, you're never going to be perfect. You're never going to be 100%. So if you're not always, you know, if you're not pushing yourself, if you're scared of failure, then you're not pushing yourself. You're never going to find out what's going to happen. And I mean, I don't think it's just business. It's individuals, you know, that you work for a company that you're scared to push yourself because maybe you have that type of a manager, that type of a client, that type of a boss, that you make a mistake and then it's like the end of the world with all the drama. And I think, you know, bosses affect that. I think spouses affect that. I mean, you know, and I think that's why so many people are scared of failure. But you need to be failing, as mm-hmm. simple as that, or you're being stagnant.
You can also, though, I think you kind of made me think about this, something specific, though. You can use failure as a positive thing in an interpersonal relationship, in a business relationship, in a work environment, because sometimes failure can show that you're trying something new, you're working to expand your horizons, you know, depending on what kind of a failure that is. You know, if you forgot to take out the trash, that's probably just like a failure of remembering or being lazy. But if you wanted to try a new initiative and you, you know, created something brand new outside of the box and it just went blank, you know, didn't pick up. Well, maybe you failed and you can acknowledge that failure, but had you not tried it, you could have potentially missed a really big mark.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it works in anything. If you're wanting to stop smoking and you're like, oh, I've tried to stop 3 times and boom, I couldn't do it. So I gave up. Or you want to lose weight. I've tried every diet program and you gave up. And I mean, and I see a lot of people that just give up mm-hmm. and think that they can't do it. That it's like, oh, that's not attainable for me. I can't do it. But it's because they're scared of the failure. And you need to fail.
If it was easy, everybody would do it.
I know. Isn't that the truth? And it's so, you know. And then what happens is I think when you've experienced the failure and then you start talking to other people. I mean, case in point, I've got a friend of mine, good friend. He's like a brother that I've grown up with since I was little. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I'm going to start doing real estate. I'm going mm-hmm. to start buying investment properties. And he starts telling me all these horror stories of how other people have done it. He would never do it. And he's done that several times because I've mentioned that several times that I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And then it's so easy to use as an excuse like, oh, well, I'm not going to do that because my friend said it. I would fail at it. Mm-hmm. And we get sucked into that. But you need to have, you know, I feel like what you have to do is you have to have the mentality that when somebody says you can't do it, you're like, whatever, watch me.
# motivation.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. Don't get pulled into that and use that as an excuse to procrastinate, to give up, to not do it, to think, oh, I might fail. Okay, yeah, you might fail, but what could have happened if you failed 10 times and succeeded the 13th time?
Yeah.
Or 12th or 11th. Or
and who knows, what you may learn from that failure may be better off as your next move.
There you go. So what have you learned from failure? Tell me something you've learned from failing on something, whatever it is. I know that's like a loaded question.
That is a loaded question. You're really making me think about something, a good nugget of knowledge. I think, you know, this isn't going to be a specific answer, but I think you learn a lot about your strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. When you can identify what kind of things you're either failing at in a larger way, or things you think you could do better, you learn where you can focus your self-education. So I think that we all need to be helping to educate ourselves, grow ourselves, cultivate our skills. So I think by paying attention to where I feel I'm failing personally or from feedback from, you know, you or my colleagues, it gives me a direction and an area to focus on for improvement. So I use it as positive motivation to grow.
So you bring up an interesting point then. So you talk about your strengths and your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So here's a question. I want to hear your thought process, your mindset on this. Mm-hmm. You know what your strengths are and you know what your weaknesses are. So whatever your weaknesses are, should you be working to improve those weaknesses or just move on and accept that it's your weakness?
I think you need to do both depending on what they are. So
good answer.
There are going to be some weaknesses you can pretty easily improve to some extent. Like talking really fast is kind of a weakness I have. It's a strength if I'm trying to get a lot of things in really quickly, but nobody picks it up. So I can consciously, and I have to consciously make a decision to talk slower.
Right.
So that is a weakness that I know I possess. Lots of people pointed out to help me remember that I can consciously choose to change. So that's something that I should focus on.
Right.
You know, versus maybe...
accounting.
Yeah, like maybe not being really good at Excel docs.
Right.
So if I know that that is a weakness of mine, I need to partner with somebody who has a strength in that and utilize my resources to better utilize my time.
Right.
And, you know, use that as something I've identified and moved on from.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Because there's some things that I know it's my weakness, but when I go to do it, it makes my stomach hurt.
Like what?
Excel documents is one. Excel documents is one thing. It makes my stomach hurt. It's just like doing that. Anything that I have to repeat more than twice, that like if I'm having to fix a mistake or something, mm-hmm. or if I'm coming up with something and, you know, a client saying, oh, I don't like that. I don't like that. And then I'm having to redo it. But, I don't like, and I see validity in that. Okay, fine. I learn from that. But if it's like, just because it's their, you know, their belief and I know it's not going to work, then that makes my stomach hurt because I'm like, oh, now I got to deal with this because they hired us as the, mm-hmm. is the professional, the paid consultant. So we can't, you know, you don't lay down and take it in the sense and say, okay, we're going to do whatever you want. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You have to say no, but you have to make it their idea too. Otherwise you don't get buy-in and you've got to get mm-hmm. buy-in. So if that all made sense.
It does. And I think it's another good point that we can carry over to the paulpotratz.com website. There's tons of free resources you can use there. There's also the Paul Potratz Facebook page where we'd love to hear. I posted recently about failure and how maybe you could help me if you have any advice or what failure you've reached in your personal and professional development. So go ahead and comment over there because there are three ways you can engage with us on the show. You can go over to the paulpotratz.com website. You can go to the Paul Potratz Facebook page, or you can call us at 855-POTRATZ. You know that's 855-POTRATZ with a Z, and give us a call for the business breakdown. And you can be featured on or off air. So keep that in mind. If you're not interested in airing your question live, we can take it offline. So give us a call at that number as well. But let's jump into scent marketing. So tell everybody what that is and why it has a good smell.
Yeah, or a bad smell.
Or a bad one.
A gross one, a gross smell. So it was years ago that I did a video, you know, my weekly series, Think Tank Tuesday, and I talked about scent marketing. So here it is. I'm getting ready to go to Las Vegas again. And
your favorite place on earth.
Not. So, but there's places in Las Vegas, for example, like if you go to the Hublot store, mm-hmm. which is watches, by the way, it has a certain scent. If you go to the Hugo Boss store, which is generally men's clothing, some women's clothing, but not mm-hmm. much. It has a certain scent. But if you go to basically any Hugo Boss store, you will have that same scent, that same smell when you walk in the store. So think about what is the one store that's in the mall that's a clothing store. When you walk by, it makes you want to sneeze because they are just overdoing the scent marketing. Any idea what it is?
Abercrombie and Fitch.
Exactly. Yeah, they overdo the scent marketing. But do you think about it? Every Abercrombie that you go to generally has the same smell.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and there's a lot of reasons that you want to do that. There's one of the, you know, hotel resorts, whatever you call it, in Vegas that I go to, mm-hmm. that I stay at, because no smoking in there. They don't allow smoking, but it has a scent. And and the scent too, it's like a lavender mix. It's very calming. It's very peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
It's too dark in there. I don't like it really dark, but they have it really dark. So not only do they have scent, but they have, you know, light marketing, I guess you can say, visual marketing.
Yeah.
But think about that. I mean, scent marketing, and there's companies over the years that even carry their scent marketing, not just from their brick and mortar store when you go into their store, but their direct mail that they sent out too.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time you opened up a magazine and they had the cologne you had to scratch and stuff?
Yeah, Macy's does that. I haven't gotten a magazine for them in years, but I remember you'd take out all the little cologne or perfume samples, or they would have their, like maybe Hugo Boss did it, like their pioneer scent.
Yeah, Pioneer Scent. So there you go. Well, I mean, but scent marketing's fascinating because, like at Hugo Boss, what happens is you go to Hugo Boss, everything's kind of laid out the same. It has the same colors, the same fixtures, but it has that scent marketing, and it creates that ease, that comfortable feeling. And mm-hmm. what it does is it's you're not just I guess appealing to visual or audio. You're also appealing to scent. And I mean, so think about this. The different grocery stores that we have in town, when you mm-hmm. walk in, there's a chain of grocery stores in our market. When you walk in the door, it smells like raw sewage. It smells like garbage. And it's because you're walking right into the vegetables, but they could really change that. And I mean, I know that there's some other, grocery mm-hmm. stores that I go into. When I walk in, I smell a bakery. I smell nice. It just makes me go, versus this other one that I...
So scent marketing really also can... play into your merchandising.
Play into your merchandising. It can also increase your profits. And I mean, and it's not just for large companies. I mean, anybody knows. I mean, like yep. where you had prospective client meetings yesterday and you're taking them into the conference room and they're walking around. What smell are they smelling in our offices?
A lot of the time it's like a lavender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have, all the lavender and, cinnamon and all that stuff. Well, not cinnamon, cedar. Cedar going to give that scent marketing. But it can affect someone's how hard they work, how much they're working, their productivity. So
I think that's a great comment. So think about how maybe you could utilize scent marketing in your business or even just your office. We'll pick that up right after the business breakdown. We're going to take a quick break, jump into news, and we'll be back.
It's time for the Business Breakdown. The 7-minute on-air consultation for you. Call now for your free business consultation with Paul and Samantha. 1-855-POTRATS. That's 1-855-768-7289. Now, let's break it down.
So welcome to the Business Breakdown. Don't forget you can call in and be featured live on air if you'd like to be featured on this week's episode of the Business Breakdown, or give us a call at 855-POTRATS and record your question if you're listening to the show on the iHeartMedia app or off of paulpotrats.com. You can also leave us your comment or question on the Paul Potrats Facebook page and we can feature you on an upcoming episode of the Business Breakdown. And this week's questions come from our email chain with a couple of individuals as well as our Facebook page. So some of you may have seen these before. But go ahead and comment and let us know what your tips are. And James started his conversation with us by asking about internet leads. And his question is a two-part question. Do you have any tips on getting responses from internet leads? And then a second part of his question is, what do you think of video emails?
I'm going to let you talk about the video emails.
Because okay.
You have the belief in that, and I'll just put my two cents into it, okay?
Okay.
So to get a better response off of... basically, someone filling out a form on your website, the lead comes in, the contact information comes in, then you try to respond to them, and then they kind of go silent. The biggest reason that they go silent is because your response is so delayed that it takes you a day or 2 days or 3 days or 4 days. And I mean, you'd have to think about it. I mean, when we want something, we want it. We want a pizza. We don't want to wait 30 minutes. We want music. We don't want to have to drive somewhere and get that whatever, mm-hmm.
CD anymore. CD,
DVD, album or whatever. Yep. We download it. So we want an immediate response. So that'd be the first thing. What's your response time? How long are you taking to get back to someone? And it really needs to be 20 minutes or less. It's as simple as that. So first thing is the response. The second thing is, what is the person asking you? And I've seen many a times that, somebody would ask a specific question about the product or service that you're selling, and you want to tell them about, let me tell you about us. We've been in business for blank. No, they asked you a specific question. Answer that question and then give them more.
We need to forget about our agenda, focus on their agenda first.
Yeah.
Then we can insert, our goal or about us info, whatever it may be.
Yeah, because if they went to your website and they filled out the information and sent you that information, they probably want you to email them back. Granted, pick up the phone and call them mm-hmm. and just call them and say, hey, I've got your information. I'm going to go ahead and send you an email on that. I just... you know, wanted to let you know it was coming. So if you don't have it in the next 20 minutes, check your spam. Mm-hmm. Let me give you my phone number real quick. If you don't have it, you can pick up the phone and call me, and even leave that on their voicemail too, if you just get a voicemail.
Yeah.
But then answer the question. I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, I know that it's been a few times now, just in the last couple of weeks, that I emailed a company asking questions, and A, I haven't heard back. And then the one that I did hear back from, they wanted to go into something. I'm like, what was my question now? So I was confused.
You forget why you even reached out to them at that point.
Right. So I think that's the biggest thing. Answer their question and give them more information, and give them, you know, your mobile phone number, you know, your mobile number. Mm-hmm. Give them ways to get in contact with you other than trying to have to call you at your office and then play phone tag and all that. Tell them to text you too.
Yeah. And on that, though, I want to disclaim something. So you mentioned call them to address their question, but then you also said maybe email them back, because if they emailed you, chances are they want to email with you. I think we also have an agenda with what we have as individuals as our preferred method of contact. Mm-hmm. So when somebody sends us an email, internet form, or just even an email, and you're considering that an internet lead, and you have their phone number, yeah, call them, leave them a voicemail, address their question, but then respond to that email. And if you don't have a phone number, it is not a cruddy lead. I cannot tell you how many times people disqualify a certain lead type because they don't like it.
Well, you think about it. I mean, who's answering the leads at your business? Who's responding to the people that are filling in those forms on your website? It's salespeople. Mm-hmm. And what do salespeople like to do? What do salespeople think that they're good at?
Talking.
Exactly. And just because they can't talk, they say, oh, that's not good information. Because I've emailed many a companies and didn't put my phone number in there because mm-hmm. I didn't want to talk to you.
Well, the other thing, too, is like if you're getting a lead in the middle of the day, let's say it's 2:00, that person could be sitting in their office, bored out of their mind, ignoring all of the piles of work they have to do, looking to buy or purchase or find out more information about whatever you have to offer. So no, they're not going to pick up the phone, but I bet you they will exchange 5 emails with you.
And text messages. Right.
You know, so we have to forget about our preferences as individuals and think about what our customers' preferences are.
Right. Because it's not like they can be on Facebook any longer now during the workday. That is a pet peeve of mine, where they automatically make the video play, the audio of the video play. Have you noticed that yet?
Yes. Okay. I always have my computer on silent or headphones in, so that way I can't hear it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you forget, though, but...
Yeah, for real.
And then I think his second part of his email, and you mentioned you have an opinion. Why don't you tell us your opinion, and then I'll give an answer on video emails.
So I think it's different for every individual, so...
And industry.
Industry, too. So if you're receiving a lot of email inquiries through mm-hmm. your website, you know, is it feasible to really do these videos? That's the first point. And I think it's going to be hard to do it, and it would slow down your response to all the other ones. So if you're receiving a lot of mm-hmm. videos, that's the first point. The second point, I know me, my personality, I don't really want to see a video of the person handling the lead yet, because I haven't formed a relationship with them yet. I asked a very specific question about the product or service. That's what I'm focused on. That's mm-hmm. what I want. I don't want all the extra fluff.
Yeah. So I think there's a few answers to this. I think if you're going to do it, you have to do it well and consistently. Mm-hmm. I think you have to have a process that's scalable. And so sometimes if your comment was, if you're getting a number of leads, it's not scalable. Well, then how do you create a video that applies to all of those individuals, or bucket of videos that apply to the individuals that are lead inquiring? And also, I think to your point where you said, hey, I haven't built a relationship yet, what is the content of that video?
Right.
If that video is heavily focused on, hey, I'm Samantha and I'm going to be helping you through this process, blah, 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 all about me, about this business.
Right.
What value does that provide? Because again, to your point earlier, you're answering based on your agenda, not their questions. So if your video is more, hey, I'm inquiring because I want to buy these boots, you're a boutique shop, and I haven't been able to see how high they go, and you're sending me a video about, hey, I'm Samantha, I can be your personal shopper, let me show you a video of these boots. Awesome. Yep. That answers my question in a better visual format than maybe the text.
Right. Then I'm in for that.
So you have to address the type of business you have and the process you have in place. And again, forget your agenda and answer those people's questions. And I think video sometimes puts your agenda first, but it can be done really well and successfully if you have a really good plan and a strongly trained team. So I think in no way can be the first lead process you put in place. It needs to be built on a really solid foundation of answering that lead and contacting that lead based on their preference, so on and so forth, like we talked about earlier. So add it into the mix. Don't start it with it.
Yeah. Well, to your point with video, if someone is doing video like that, mm-hmm. for example, that I was inquiring about a pair of boots and they did a video of the boots and sent that to me, I'm a buyer.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. But if they send me a video with fluff about mm-hmm. who they are and how many years they've been doing this and how they're going to help me and how my business is important, I'm not watching it, and I'm probably not listening to much more you're going to do, because it's just going to automatically make me think.
Well, because you wanted the answer to your questions.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want. Answer my question. If you answer it in video, I'm definitely a buyer.
Awesome. James, I love that question. Thank you for writing into the business breakdown. If your business is using video, I'd love for you to share it with us on social or via email so we can take a look at it and help you improve that process. And so our next question is from Shelley, and she is a life and business coach. And she wants to create a Facebook group for her new training and coaching company. But her concern is that they aren't enough people to make it worth it. So again, she's a life and business coach. She wants to create a Facebook group to promote her company and to her audience, but she's afraid that there won't be enough people to make it worth it. And I think this is something that a lot of businesses face, whether a Facebook group or not. At what point do I have enough people, influence, individuals to make something worth it? What do you think?
Well, I think since she is a life coach, it's a very personalized business approach. It's not like she's a brick and mortar selling, you know, bagels.
Mm-hmm.
But even that could be something. But anyway, my point is that she should start with her personal profile first. A lot of times we want the fruit, but we're not willing to work on the root.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. and so maximize your personal, your Facebook page would maximize at 5,000. So reach that 5,000 number, and then you can start the group. But I think you need to make the group exclusive, that you just don't let everybody into it. That you make it where people want to be in it, where mm-hmm. it's something special. And we've definitely seen groups like that, and then people want into it, and the numbers have definitely grown into the, you know, tens of thousands.
So with exclusivity can come a smaller number of members that doesn't make it look like there's no momentum or interest behind the business, but instead it's a curated audience that
with engagement
that's highly engaged. So it makes it more valuable to the members compared to having a larger number of members.
Yeah, I would much rather be in a group that is, let's say, 50 to 70 people. Well, that mm-hmm. numbers sound really small, because as a society, we're all about, you know, really quantity versus quality. But I'd rather be in a group to 50 to 70 members that were engaged, that were sharing, mm-hmm. that were giving insight and help and advice and all that, versus, you know, you go to a group, it's like 35,000 people and there's no engagement, no interaction. And, you know,
yeah,
people are from foreign countries that, in other words, they don't really exist, if that made sense.
So fake profiles.
Fake profiles.
You know, your competitors trying to sneak in on you, maybe.
Yeah. And I mean, there's companies out there that say, oh, we'll grow your Facebook group, your Facebook page to all these thousands. And no, this has to be organically done. You don't want to pay to do it. You know, I used to be of the mindset before that, oh yeah, grow it, you know, have tens of thousands, but make it exclusive and make it highly engaging. And then the people that are in it are going to see value in it and partake in it. And when they wake up in the morning, that's going to be one of the first things they look at. Hey, what's going on? Who commented?
Mm-hmm. So, it makes it engageable. Like, I think that's a big thing with a lot of groups, is if there's this huge thread of recycled content, then you can't engage with it, because every, you know, 2 minutes there's something different posted, so it doesn't let anything live for a period of time, which has pros and cons to it.
Right.
But for a business or life coach, having that information can be really valuable in a smaller, close-knit environment.
Yeah. And I know that sounds overwhelming, but you know, this way you would actually get, what's the word, Sam, the people that, the moderators,
mm-hmm.
you would get moderators. So this becomes scalable, so it doesn't fall on your shoulders completely. You've got a selection of moderators that help moderating the conversation. So if somebody gets crazy, then mm-hmm. they can say, calm down.
Yeah. Or, and I mean, Shelley, if your goal is to create this huge group over a period of time, then you can make it larger, but then you can, like you said, build moderators into it. So you can have maybe 10,000 people in it, but there's moderators making sure that we have rules, curating the content, sticking to those rules, and creating that engagement, as engagement should be a pillar then of your group.
And I think what happens a lot of times is we see a group that we become part of a group and it has like 20,000 members in it. And we're like, oh, I want to do that too. And there's the one thing, it takes time, but it's just, you became familiar with that group just recently and you think it just happened overnight.
Yeah.
That's a group that somebody's been working on. They've been focusing on every single day.
And to that point, as you're launching your business, you may be better off focusing on being an active member in other groups,
yes,
sharing your knowledge, building relationships in those groups to feed your business, and then build a group later on in your business plan instead of at the inception and launch of your business.
I agree.
So think about how you can use that, because you're, you know, a lot of times you're one person making this, you know, leap. Your resources are limited. Starting a group is not a small challenge. It is a lot of time and devotion you have to give towards it.
True. Yeah. And I mean, and we see that, and we want to check that box and we want to do that, but we don't do a very good job at it. So yeah, it should be further down the road.
Yeah. Awesome. I liked that question.
Cool. Figured you would.
And our last question is from Lauren. And she says, I'm a one-woman show trying to follow your advice on content and resources, but it's weighing me down. How do I keep up with it while also working with clients and on future projects? Any help is appreciated.
So to re-say Lauren's question, she's trying to figure out how to start creating engaging content, so people will see her as an authority and become more aware of her. And content meaning in the written form, video form, right?
Correct. But what she's saying, and I think the meat of her question is, it's really like weighing her down, slowing her down. She's only one person behind her business, so she doesn't have ability to delegate to other team members. So how does she get that done and then focus on more content and future projects?
Right. So the way I did it was in the evening, I would, you know, late in the evening, instead of watching TV, even though the TV was going, mm-hmm, I would sit there with my laptop and I would write blog articles. Granted, I had my blog articles that were being featured on other blog sites that already had traffic. So it was well worth my time because people were seeing my articles versus me writing my own blog articles, putting them on my own website and trying to get traffic for people to read them.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, I did have them on my website, but they were going every day to other, you know, websites that had a lot of traffic. So it made it worthwhile. So I made time instead of watching TV or doing something that wasn't going to generate opportunities for me.
Mm-hmm.
I did what I needed to do. That's the first step. Find a website where you can put your content so you feel worth of it. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you want to spend time. So before maybe even looking at curating all of this content, you should spend time to find like-minded individuals or businesses or publications that you can be featured on.
Yeah.
A lot of people will help you cross-promote yourself. So yeah, Sharing each other's content also helps in a lot of other ways that I'm not going to get into. But that's going to make the content go that much farther.
Yeah. And I mean, and so many times we start out with the idea, oh, I need to generate content, but you need to start out with the idea, where will this content go first?
Yes.
That's what you need to decide first. Where is it going to be so it's worth my time?
Yep. Because I mean, if you're just waiting for people through a Facebook ad to find your content, perfect. But it can go so much farther by utilizing another audience.
Exactly. So that's the first part of it. But the second part of it, again, my experience, what I learned was I got to the point that I was writing so many articles every single day,
mm-hmm,
that I was staying up to, you know, 3:00, 3:30 in the morning, that I'm like, okay, this is not sustainable. So I said, all right, I'm going to start selling my byproduct. And at first I thought, well, what I'm doing is not very interesting. People aren't going to really care. But, you know, things that would happen during the day, like a client would ask me a question. So we set up a camera on a tripod, set up the lights. It was permanently set up. And we would put, you know, hit record, and I would go in front of the camera and I would talk about something that happened during the day in our daily process that people would be able to watch and benefit from. So selling my byproduct is what it was. So real quick, you know, 4-minute, 5-minute, 7-minute video, whatever it is. And then we pushed that out. It went on our website. Again, we had places for it to go where people would see it, and we emailed it out. So,
and now you have tools like Facebook Live, Instagram Live, that when those moments hit, you can even utilize those syndication platforms to make it easy.
Which we need to start doing a better job. That's one of my failures right there.
Well, I think, though, I would encourage yet caution our audience as well to ensure that you have something worthy of saying. You're not just going live to be like, hey, what's up, guys? Hope all's well.
Peace out, brother.
So,
but hey, I'm seeing people that do that, and they get a lot of views and a lot of comments. It just doesn't work for me. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think your audience is probably curated a little bit differently than, you know, if that's
a different
type of business.
Yes.
The other thing I would say to Lauren as well is, you know, think about how you can find free labor. Like, let's be honest. That's part of it too. How can I not pay somebody to work for me? Because maybe your resources are limited, and that's why you're a one-woman show right now. Interns. A lot of the time college kids are looking for experience to add to their resume. They need an internship to graduate. That's something a lot of colleges are building into their programs these days. So you can put out a internship offer to a lot of local universities. And think about it. If you're creating a lot of content and you can write the bullet points, but then putting the wordsmithing together is where you need that help. English majors, huge opportunity. Maybe you're, need some graphic design, graphic artists. What a great opportunity to add those assets to your business. They get experience, you grade them, they get credit. Maybe you have a future employee. Maybe you just write them a good recommendation, but now you can leverage some additional assistance and it doesn't have to cost you anything.
You know, and if you want to spend a little bit of money, something that's really growing that I'm hearing more of and seeing more is having a VA, a virtual assistant.
Very true.
I'm seeing that more and more, and it's amazing. So you kind of think about it. If you want to be a stay-at-home person, why not become a virtual assistant? So, yeah, I need one of those.
We'll look into it.
Nah, probably not. It would be a little crazy. So,
Well, thank you, Lauren, for your question.
There you go.
So that's it for this week's section of the Business Breakdown. But don't forget, give us a shout at 855-POTRATS to be featured on an upcoming episode or continue today's conversation online. But let's jump back into our conversation about scent marketing. So you kind of left us off with a little teaser about how we actually utilize it in our office to help set the mood.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, where I said, you know, it's been done in direct mail. It's just so many different ways. But in recently we talked about colors.
Mm-hmm.
So now you tie colors with scent marketing, and there's companies out there. I mean, if you do a search for scent marketing, I mean, there's scent marketing agencies that's what they do. They'll create your own custom scent. So it's a unique scent other than like lavender.
Well, it's a science.
It really is. Yeah. Cause the scent marketing can cause someone, you know, just by the smells that we smell, it can make someone hungry. It can make them sleepy. It can wake them up. It can motivate them. It can do all these things.
And calm them. That's a big one, right? Calming.
Yeah. Calming scents. I mean, there's, and you know, if you've ever sold a house, I'm sure we've always heard, oh, you're selling your house. Make sure when the showing, bake cookies. Yeah. You know, and there's all these different things. And it's true that, you know, scent can control so many emotions. So think about that in your, you know, your own marketing or anything. I mean, I'm a big potpourri freak. I mean, Christy laughs at me about that. We're out at the store and I see a nice potpourri display. I'm standing over there for an hour going to the point I can't smell anymore. We go to the mall or whatever, and I'm over at the counter smelling colognes.
That is true. You do like gravitate over there.
Yeah. Well, you know,
like smell this. I don't know. I walk out of there not smelling anything.
Yeah. You have to smell the coffee beans and everything else afterwards to clear it. But I mean, I've purchased so many colognes. You know what cologne I'm wearing today?
I don't.
I'm not. Because I don't like to smell cologne on me. So it's kind of weird.
That is a very interesting, fun fact.
Yeah. So there you go.
You like to buy them, but not wear them.
Yeah. Well, I'll wear them for a couple times and I'm like, ugh. And at the end of the day, it's like, oh, I don't like that smell. And
you know
like
why you don't like it anymore?
Why?
Because the way it reacts with your body is different than the way it smells in the container.
Well, it smells good when I put it on, but I think when it's on my clothes afterwards and I go to wash my clothes, and if I can't get the smell out of my clothes, because I like a different smell on my clothes, that spring fresh scent. So, but yeah, scent is huge. And I mean, but not only are there scent marketing agencies out there that will create your own scent, there's the companies that will come in and put the scent into your heating or cooling system so it blows through your entire, you know, office or your home or whatever it is.
So you don't have to be like the Abercrombie employees that like walk around with the spray bottles all day?
Is that how they do it? They walk around spraying?
Don't quote me on that, but I feel like I've seen them walk around before and do it. I mean, this was years ago. I don't know that I've been in an Abercrombie for like 10 years, but...
We should go back. And go
just audit their process.
Audit their process. But yeah, like where I talked about Hugo Boss. I mean, I like the smell of Hugo Boss because it smells like freshly pressed clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just has a good smell. And I mean, I think it's fascinating, though, what smells can do. And I'm going to tell you something here. You ready?
Okay.
Try not to laugh at me, okay?
I probably will.
No, you won't. You'll probably have done the same thing. So there's on occasion when, you know, how we're big about sending thank you mm-hmm. cards and all yes. that. There's on occasion because, you know, I have my essential oils.
Are you
going
to pull like a Legally Blonde?
I don't know.
Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. So there's occasions when I do my thank you cards where I have all my essential mm-hmm. oils that I will drip a little bit of oil on one of my thank you cards. So when they open the envelope, they smell that, especially if they've been to the office and they yes. smelled the lavender, then they're like, oh. So it creates that.
It reminds them.
It reminds them. So, yeah.
I made the Legally Blonde joke because in the movie, she sprays perfume on her resumes and then hands them out. So, similar concept.
Yeah, it's kind of the same concept.
Leaving an impression or, you know, remembering an experience via scent.
Well, just hopefully that people receiving my thank you cards when I do that, they're not allergic to lavender or clove or whatever I'm using at that time. So, yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, for real.
EpiPen not included.
For real. So, but no, I think it's fascinating and you kind of think about it. So, you know, what could you do with scent marketing? Make your place smell better. It's as simple as that. There's so many offices that I've gone into that just kind of have that dry smell. It's just like not a really good smell. So.
Create an experience.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes a huge difference on that. So
we talked about scent marketing, great questions in the business breakdown, and also failure. Do you have closing thoughts for our audience on today's episode?
Start failing. I think that's the, you know, when we talked a lot about failure, and the reason that we talk so much about failure is because I feel like there's not enough people failing.
We should start a I failed chain.
Yeah, I know. We all, you know, want to be successful, and, you know, to be successful, it takes failure.
Well, we also have to be honest, right? So, like, honestly, we fail to succeed.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not a bad thing. It just has this notion that failure is bad because when you're in school, if you fail, it's not a positive thing. Like, you're not really learning that much from it. I guess you're learning what you don't know, but...
Well, yeah, and I think, like you said, there's big failures and there's little failures, but there's also the failure because, you know, failure because you're not willing to try. You're not willing to. So if you're receiving failure out of procrastination, or if you're receiving failure out of lack of doing something, or receiving failure because, you know, whatever, you're sticking your head in the sand mm-hmm. or you're not trying, that's a completely different failure than I tried to do this and I failed at it. And then, you know, oh, I'm not any good at that. Well, get good at it.
So closing thoughts, try and fail because you tried.
And keep trying.
And then throw some
scent
fabulous smelling scents in there.
Yeah. Order your essential oils today. So there you go.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of the Paul Potrat Show. But did you know you can now listen on demand? So you can find us at paulpotrats.com, visit paulpotrats.com, and click on the radio show tab. You can listen to all of our previous episodes as well as today's show if you missed any part of what we covered. And don't forget, continue the conversation on Paul Potrat's Facebook page. We look forward to seeing you next week.
You've been listening to The Paul Potrat Show. Paul is the architect behind Potrat's Advertising, an international consulting and advertising agency based in Schenectady, New York.
For more info or to learn how to work with Paul and the Potrat's team to grow your business and improve your processes, visit paulpotrats.com. That's Paul, P-O-T-R-A-T-Z.com.
And join Paul and Samantha next Sunday morning at 11, right here on WGY.